You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hi, it's Christy Swanson, and you're listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand?
It's showtime.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And welcome to the show.
Yes.
But first, make sure you subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com. Mm-hmm. We have several streaming platforms. We are its own streaming platform. We got Secrets Uncovered, The Truth Behind the Lies podcast there. We got Rant Radio there. We have Strange World with Robert there. These are all subscription-based shows. Mm-hmm. We have more on the way. The shows that shaped us are on the way.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's another subscription-based show. Mm-hmm. This show you can get anywhere you get your podcasts. It's You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing today?
We're doing a new,
very brand new show.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of movies opening weekend because it's busy.
It's hard. Like, yeah. There's a lot of people that go, and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah. But we did see this one opening weekend.
We did.
Yeah.
This one I was excited for. This one I was like, we should definitely try to see this opening weekend.
I mean, I didn't know really anything about this movie.
Okay.
Other than the brief trailer we had seen.
Okay.
And I was like, that looks weird.
Yeah.
That was that.
I mean, the trailer doesn't give much away.
No.
You really don't know a lot about the movie. That's the problem with some movies. I'm just like, that's a terrible trailer. How are you supposed to know if you want to go and see it or not?
I mean, this was a good one because I feel like it was suspenseful.
Yeah.
But not, you know, stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I thought the trailer was good. I just was like,
We should dive into this.
Okay. So, Weapons, as we said, just came out this past weekend, so that would have been, what, like the 8th it was released, because for some reason I didn't write it down. So, yeah, just came out the weekend of August 8th.
Yes.
Yeah, we saw it on the 9th. So, our brief description. When all but one child from the same class mysteriously vanish on the same night at exactly the same time, a community is left questioning who or what is behind their disappearance.
Wow.
Ooh. So we have a couple of taglines. Last night at 2:17 a.m., every child from Mrs. Gandy's class woke up, got out of bed, went downstairs, opened the front door, walked into the dark, and they never came back.
Dum, dum, dum.
Except that's not true because one of the kids didn't actually walk out the door.
You're right.
And do all that. So that's a little misleading. So all but one.
All but one, yeah.
Correct.
That's what they should have done. But
all but one.
When you're doing the trailer and everything like that.
Ooh, it's every kid.
That all every kid seems better than all but
one kid.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And the second tagline, the most harmless things can hurt you. There you go. It was directed and written by Zach Cregger, who's also the dude behind Barbarian. So if you recognize his name, that's why. Our cast, we have Josh Brolin as Archer, the father of Matthew, who's one of the missing children. Julia Garner is Justine Grandy. She's the teacher, as we just alluded
to. She's also from Ozark. She's the breakout star from Ozark.
And Wolfman, which we talked about earlier this year.
Yes.
Came out in January. So, yeah. Alden Ekranek is Paul Morgan, a troubled police officer who has a complicated relationship with Justine. Austin Abrams is James, the homeless drug addict and burglar. Carrie Christopher is Alex Lilly, the only child from Justine's class who did not disappear.
Wait a minute. Austin Abrams, wasn't he Elvis? Yeah, I think so.
Was he?
He might looked totally different in that. I didn't recognize him who he was.
Was he? Are you sure? That could be. Let's look him up.
I think he has a new movie coming out with Cotton Weary from The actor Cotton Weary from Scream.
Austin movies and TV shows. I don't know that he was Elvis, but we'll.
Maybe check.
He was in Euphoria.
Maybe I'm.
Paper Towns, The Walking Dead.
Getting he was him in confused.
Shameless. I think you are, because I don't think that was the same.
That's character. Austin Butler. I'm sorry.
Yes, I was like, it's Austin something, but I don't think it's this.
Yeah,
kid.
I'm getting confused.
So they would look completely different because yeah. they're different people. But anyway, they absolutely but he's still are. Been. He's a busy actor.
He is a busy guy.
Yes. Benedict Wong is Marcus Miller, the school principal.
Yeah.
I always love seeing Benedict Wong, honestly. But outside the MCU, it's always nice to see him.
Yeah, every time he pops up, I'm just like, oh, it's you, Wong. It's
yeah,
you.
Yeah, look.
Welcome back.
Amy Madigan is Gladys, Alex's quote-unquote aunt. More on her. Toby Huss is Ed Locke, the police captain and Paul's father-in-law. He's also a very busy actor. I feel like he's in, like, a million things.
He used to be in Halt and Catch Fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was, like, one of his first series.
I don't know. I feel like he's been around a while. Sarah Paxton is Erica, the mother of Bailey, one of the missing children. Justin Long is in this as Gary, very briefly.
He makes a brief cameo.
Yep, father of Bailey, one of the missing children. So,
He is like, Oline, how are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, literally.
And that's it.
Yeah, it's crazy. June Diane Raphael is Donna Morgan, Paul's wife and Ed's daughter. Whitmer, Thomas, is Mr. Lily, Alex's father. Kaylee Tara is Mrs. Lily, Alex's mother. Clayton Ferris is Terry Miller, Marcus's husband. Luke Speakman is Matthew Graff, Archer's son, and one of Justine's missing students. And Scarlett Scherr is the child narrator of the film.
Okay. I wish he would have spoken up a little bit louder.
Yeah, it was creepier that way, though.
No, I get it.
So, box office. Well, maybe we should see if this has been updated, shall we? Since I put this together last night, and I think the number you told me today was different than what I have on here. But I can tell you the budget is estimated to be at $38 million.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see where opening weekend finally landed. Box office. No, it's the same. So nothing's updated.
Okay.
Opening weekend, $42.5 million. Worldwide, it's sitting at $70
million. So, budget of $38
million. Mm-hmm.
Opening weekend in U.S. and Canada,
$42.5 million.
They'll definitely do a sequel to this.
We'll see.
It's already gotten its budget back.
Yeah, we'll see if something else comes
but
up.
Isn't this a fresh idea?
Yeah.
Like, it's the original concept, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no documentation, at least so far in the trivia or anything, that indicates he was inspired by other things, but it wasn't like he read a book and then adapted it or something like that. No.
What other movies did we see that were original concepts?
Recently?
Uh-huh. It was The Wolfman and something else.
Oh, for a horror movie?
No, just in general.
Oh, in general. Well, I mean, I assume, like, F1 was, like, an original concept, but I don't know if that was... I don't think that was based on anything other than the
races. It was a long time ago. It was a little further back. There's another movie I'm thinking of, but I just can't think of it.
Okay.
But it was original idea. Anyway, keep going.
I don't know. Maybe if it comes to you, let us know. Ratings-wise, 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb, 87% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.3 out of 5 on Google. Trivia. So to further capitalize on the themes of this movie, theaters listed showtimes at 2:17.
That's pretty clever.
What we said, that's when the children vanish. Archer's son Matthew, of course, also is one of the missing, goes away at 2:17. And Matthew 2:17 in the Bible describes the fulfillment of a massacre of children, the slaughter of the innocents.
They really thought this through.
Yeah, I mean, that's a creative
tie-in. The 2:17, they really thought this through. That wasn't just a half-assed idea. They fleshed that out.
And Justine was teaching her class about parasites shortly before the kids were missing. And Principal Marcus is seen watching a documentary about cordyceps and its effects on ants, which involves, basically, they rob them of their free will and make them do whatever the parasites want. It's kind of like The Last of Us, too. Like,
yeah.
Those are cordyceps, is my understanding. That's, like, the basis of it. Very creepy.
And I think that documentary is actually narrated by Wong.
We were in the theater and we both agreed that the quote-unquote narrator of this documentary sounded like him, but could not validate it. So that's something we'll have to watch out for to see if that's true. But yeah, it sounded like him.
Very much so. I was like, I think it's narrated by... I mean, don't put it past movie producers to do that, but you're just like, yeah, that's definitely narrated by him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to be clear, you know, in case you haven't listened to any of our episodes, this will be spoiler-filled, so we're going to ruin the movie. So
yes.
Don't listen if you don't want to do that, because so far the trivia has been pretty benign, but we will be getting into more. While Alex's dad is driving him to school, Alex asks how long Aunt Gladys is going to stay, and his dad estimates no longer than a month. And in the final scene, here's a spoiler, she is killed by the missing children roughly 1 month after they went missing. So that's kind of a little tie-in there. Rooney Mara and Elizabeth Olsen were actually offered the lead role, but both turned it down. Pedro Pascal and Renee Renciv were also cast but had to drop out due to scheduling conflicts. Pascal actually dropped out to be in the Fantastic Four, which also just came out.
I think that's allowed. I think Pascal was like, oh, I have Fantastic Four.
I mean, he has a contract. I'm sure the contract, no offense, with Marvel is much more intense than this was.
Yeah, be, absolutely. So yeah, he was like, and he probably got paid a lot more.
It's Marvel.
I would like to know if they had went ahead and paid it, the old actors,
mm-hmm,
and then they were like, oh, we got to drop out. So
I don't know.
Did they get the money back, or they were just like, well, keep it. We'll just, the studio will replenish the budget.
Who knows? Just like with Barbarian, Krieger claimed that he came up with the premise first and worked out the rest of the plot later. I didn't have an outline. I didn't know what it was about. It was just like, let the movie show itself to me. I want to watch the movie as I'm writing it. And I think that's cool.
That's why I say it's an original concept, because most people aren't doing that these days.
No, it's very interesting. And Deadline Hollywood reported that New Line Cinema won the spec script in a bidding war against, allegedly, Universal, Netflix, and Sony TriStar. The Hollywood Reporter detailed that part of the deal was an 8-figure sum of money, a guaranteed green light for production, final cut privileges for Krieger, interest in a back-end plot, and, most importantly, a guarantee of a theatrical release.
I think he loves theatrical releases. I think his movies do well in the theater, it gets people to the theater as well. Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a great movie to see in the theater.
I think, well, keep going. We'll dive in.
One last trivia. Also, according to Deadline, Universal was the only other studio, aside from New Line, to have gotten close to getting the deal. Jordan Peele would have produced it through Monkey Paw Studio with Universal, but the offer made by them was allegedly $7 million less than New Line's proposal. And Peele was supposedly ready to provide that amount of money out of his contractual back end, but Universal was uneasy about the budget as a business proposition and walked away. Peele and Krieger actually shared the same manager, Peter Principato, which might have caused a conflict of interest. And it says Peele later parted ways with his management artists first. So,
yeah. Wow.
But yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
So this movie starts like
black.
Yeah.
First of all, there's nothing on this screen. I don't know about you, but I did have a moment of, is it working? Because there's just the little kid's voice.
Yeah.
This is a true story. It's not, but you know what?
I love that. It's narrated by children.
Yes.
So when you're
Scarlets.
When you're opening the movie, you're like, I wish she would really speak up louder.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how kids talk. Wasn't it a guy and a girl?
No, the only narrator was Scarlett.
Okay.
Yeah, she's the only one.
So we get that this event happened, that all these kids wandered out of their house, but we're just like not sure what happened. All but one.
Yeah, because that's how the movie
starts.
They're like, let's show you what happened. And it's literally the bunch of kids running, looking all crazy
when they're running,
their arms out, and they all run the exact same way, just leaving the house.
Just at 2:17 in the morning.
2:17 a.m. And nobody knows where they went. Nobody knows what happened to them.
And you're just... And they had a big get-together, conference, meeting at the school.
Yeah, to talk about what happened.
And everybody in the town is blaming this teacher.
Yes, Julia Garner's character, Miss Gandy.
Right. And so she goes to this meeting, and everybody, think Dante's Peak, when they're like, oh my goodness, the volcano's coming. It's like a town meeting. Mm-hmm. They're all like, oh, we want to talk to her. What was she doing in this classroom?
We want to hear from the teacher. So she gets up there and she's like, I don't know. Like, I'm upset just like you are. But they don't want to believe that because you want to blame
somebody. Yeah, you want somebody to blame. Yes. But prior to this, all the police have investigated her. Not just the police, the FBI, the police. They interrogated her and they...
One kid that was left,
yeah,
Alex.
And him and his family. Mm-hmm. But there's more to meet the eye with Alex. Mm-hmm. But one thing I really liked about this movie is because you're introduced to these characters at a time in the timeline in the movie.
Yeah, so they...
And then they go back and refill their steps. Like, you get their...
Yeah, so what they do is they'll bring a name up on the screen. So the first one was Justine, because we're going to start with Miss Gandy, the teacher. So it says Justine, so we're going to see what is going on. So for her point, it's basically leaving this ambush, right? And we're seeing how she lives her life, essentially. What's going on with her... You know, because you're trying to suss out, does she have something to do with it? What does she know?
Is she involved? What does she know?
No, she's just clearly an alcoholic, and she doesn't know anything at the end of the day.
Right.
She's just getting blamed, and she sleeps with a police officer that she used to have a thing with, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
They had a past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't paint her in the best light, but it certainly doesn't make her look guilty
for
this.
Yeah, she's struggling, too. I think that's the reason why she was such an alcoholic, is she walked out one day, and her class was there, and then walked in, and nobody showed up but one.
Yeah, I mean, they alluded to, and they mentioned at one point, that her previous teaching job, she was terminated because she had a relationship with another faculty member or something, and she had a DUI. So she has a history.
It's not really that bad.
But, well, I'm saying we don't know where she's at in recovery. Do we see her drinking now? But that doesn't mean that she didn't leave that ambush and that was the first time she had a drink in...
Oh, I know.
A year and a half or something.
I think she is very much an alcoholic. Like,
I mean,
this is what she...
seems like an alcoholic.
This is what she does. Mm-hmm. You know, this is how her coping mechanism.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, we started with her... We find out all of her plot points, figuring out, okay.
And she's trying to investigate.
What's going on?
She wants to talk to Alex.
So right.
She's talking to the principal. Like, you should send someone over there. There's something weird at Alex's house because she goes there and no one answers the door. No one will talk to her. The windows are covered in paper. Like newspapers. And she peeks in there and she actually sees Alex's parents just, like, sitting on the couch looking like zombies, and it freaks her out, and she's like, there's something wrong with this place. And she ends up sleeping in her car out front of the house, trying to spy on it, and this fucking creepy ass
zombie,
I believe it was the mother who
came
out,
mother.
Right, comes out. It's so creepy, it's great. She comes out and she's got something in her hand, and all of these like zombie people walk super weird and everything, comes out. I thought it was a knife at first, but it was scissors. She comes out and she stands next to Justine's door, the driver's side door, and we see her look in at her, and everyone's like, oh, shit. And then you literally hear her get in the back seat because Justine's dumbass didn't lock her car.
Who doesn't do that?
Especially if you're just out there in the middle of the night. Like, what are you doing, lady? So she gets in there, and the last thing we basically see is her cutting, I think, the lock of her hair. And everyone's like... Something's going down.
You got away from this.
Yes. And who was next? Was it Archer, Josh Brolin's character?
Josh Brolin's character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he is one of the parents. You see him come up at the town hall meeting, and he's like,
Very vocal.
17 of our kids are disappeared, and she was the last one to see them. Mm-hmm. I want to know what she was talking about, teaching them in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And he was very, very vocal. Mm-hmm. And then you see him on his timeline that this whole thing is killing him with his son disappearing.
Yeah, he sleeps in his son's bed. He has nightmares about what happened.
Him and his wife are having problems.
Yeah. He's suffering at work.
Yeah.
So he's some sort of a contractor or something, and he's just messing up this house they're trying to build.
It was like, yeah, they wanted green paint. He orders red paint.
He didn't order something else in time or ordered the wrong size. I can't remember what it was. But
right.
He's just messing up. And it seems the crew is trying to be patient with him because I think they understand. But at the same time,
they're like, come on, bro.
You're messing
up. And he even says this. He's like, oh, I fucked it up. Mm-hmm. It was my fault. I fucked it up.
I'll go return the paint, whatever.
I'll grab the paint back.
But he didn't mention what happened in Justine's car.
So in her scenes, she's at home one night and she gets these taps on the door.
They ring the doorbell and then they aggressively bang on the door.
But that was Josh Brolin's character.
Oh, very clearly.
He was fucking with her.
We didn't know that at the time.
We didn't know that at the time.
Once we get to Josh's
in her timeline, you're just like, what? Who's at the door? And then I like it when she's like, all right, the hell with this. She grabs mace or something, mm-hmm. and runs out the door. Mm-hmm. And when her car's across the road. So she mm-hmm. parks it across the street from her house. Mm-hmm. And then she walks out and she notices in red paint, which mm-hmm. painted on it.
Guess who had the red
paint? And then we get to Josh Brolin's and he's like, oh, I ordered this red paint for the wrong thing. And mm-hmm. he sees the teacher pull into the liquor store at first. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, I'm going to do something. And then he follows her home, I guess, and just mm-hmm. to fuck with her. And then rings her doorbell, knocks on it, violently. Mm-hmm. And then paints witch on. Good thing he didn't do bitch, right?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
I think because the aunt who's actually controlling all of this is a witch. So
right,
I think it's
right.
supposed to be just all a big tie-in to this.
But right.
Yeah, and what I like the most about this is that, you know, we see Justine's character go out and see it on her car. She's trying to report it to the police. She's trying to scrub it off. She can't get rid of it. It's just there, right?
Yeah.
In the red paint. The only real tie-in we get, there's never a true acknowledgement of what Archer, Josh Brolin's character, does, except that he goes to shut his truck, and you see that it's red paint, and we acknowledge the door is red
right.
in the house. You see it's red paint, and then we see him follow her, and it's at night, and it's that same night we know when she saw the car issue. That's the only time or way you know that he did it. We never see him paint the car.
He doesn't acknowledge it.
We don't see any of that. He never acknowledges it later when he's talking to her. I mean, I really liked that it was, you know, saying the audience is smart enough to know the connection
here. To fill in the gaps.
Yeah, we don't need to, see him get out and paint it and run away from her door. We just know he did it at this point because of the way the movie, you know, explained where he was at.
Well, don't you think that makes movies more interesting when you subconsciously say, oh, this is him. He
clearly did it. Yeah, I like it better that we didn't have to see everything spelled out for us.
Your mind filled in the gaps.
Mm-hmm. So you know he did it at the end of the day.
Yeah. And then
I think, isn't
it? We went to Wong.
Yeah, so Benedict, Marcus Miller's character, the principal.
We back up to this when they're at the meeting.
Yes.
And they're like, he's like, you gotta. The teacher, Justine, goes up there and she's trying to talk to him. And then they're like, you're a witch. And then he steps up and he's like, she's hurting as a member of this community as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really serious. You have to knock this off.
Yeah.
And then him and a bunch of cops escort her out of the building because
right.
it's like an angry mob. They're
yes.
like, they're out for blood. I mean, imagine this. Your kid goes missing. She's the last. I wouldn't say that. I don't understand why they blamed her.
Because they were all part of her classroom. That was the only tie-in.
That's the only tie-in. But
it doesn't matter. These parents have clearly been told, the ones who are trying to blame her, because I believe
But they went home. They went home. They
right.
got tucked into bed. She wasn't even the last person to see them.
Exactly.
They should have blamed themselves.
The police captain, I mean, he's literally points this out, I believe, to Arch. I think he was the one who pointed out to Archer. He's like, this was the middle of the night. She had nothing to do with this.
She was at home.
She didn't do anything to make all of these children leave the house in the middle of the night. She wasn't outside the houses. She wasn't involved at all. Like, they only blame her because they're all tied in
to the classroom. Her
because of the classroom.
Right.
And I guess they're not going to blame the little kid that's left because he's a child. So they want to blame someone, they blame her. But yes, if you watch Get Out, she was nowhere near these children. They were all at home across town.
Yeah. I mean, and then the parents should have been like, why didn't you lock the door? Something like that. I mean,
I don't think it would have stopped them.
Right. No, I agree. But
fair point.
We lock our doors at night. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know where each other's at night. But mm-hmm. when I was watching the movie, I was like, she wasn't even the last person to see these people. And they're just...
No.
But you know how small towns are. They're just like, we need somebody to blame, and it's you.
Pick somebody, and she was it. Well...
So Wong follows her out, and then we get to the point where Justine is investigating this. She's like, oh, you...
Yeah.
I think she...
They have a meeting in the office.
Yes,
I can't remember
yes.
when you see the meeting, which timeline it is, but we do see her talking to him, and he's basically like, you need to take time off.
Right.
Like, and she doesn't want to, but he's like, listen, Alex has been moved to another class. You need to take time away because it's a problem. Like, not you personally necessarily, but, like, the parents are... They're blaming you. You can't be here. It's not good for anyone.
It's not safe.
And then she wants to talk to Alex, and he's like, no, you can't talk to Alex. You're trying to talk to him because you would feel better if you talk to him, but you need to leave him alone.
Right. It's about you.
Obviously, imagine she's a bad listener.
Imagine what he's feeling. And yeah. I did respect that. He's a young kid and everything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, leave him alone. And he's traumatized, too. And, yeah, so he basically is like, you can't bother him. She does not even remotely listen to that because she follows Alex at one point, like we mentioned. Not only when she went to his house did she knock on the door and everything, but she caught him in the road, and he was like, leave me alone.
Don't follow me home.
Yeah.
So... She followed him. She has this meeting with Wong. She gets fired. So she's like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going
to
just
go. I don't think she was fired. I think she was literally just told to leave.
Okay.
Leave have everyone some alone and have take some time off. I don't think he actually fired her.
Okay.
Yeah.
But she was like, I'm going to do my own investigation.
Yeah.
So she watches Alex get on the bus, the kid, follows him home.
Yeah.
Next day.
She finds the paper and all that on the windows.
Yeah. Next day. She's parked in front of her house when he pulls up in the school bus. She's like, hey, Alex, how you doing? You know, you and I are the only two left. What's up?
Mm-hmm.
He snaps at her and is like, mm-hmm. don't follow me home. He goes in the house. She walks up to the house, rings the doorbell, bangs on it, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, oh, she gets really big. Really big.
She goes in the backyard. And
goes in the backyard and
yeah.
like... creeps through the windows, and that's when she notices that there's paper covering, like newspaper, mm-hmm. covering the windows, and where anything that light can touch, mm-hmm. it's all covered with papers.
I'm trying to remember, was Marcus the next one, or was it like Paul, the cop?
It was the cop.
Yeah, I don't think Marcus was this soon. So the Paul, he didn't have a whole lot going on with this other than Paul has some anger issues that he needs to...
The cop.
...work out, yes.
Yes.
I mean, he chases down the drug dealer, James.
So, he's
and
on...
all of his problems, basically.
He's on... There. No, I think it was the drug dealer first.
No, the drug dealer was after him.
Okay, so it was the cop.
It was Paul first.
Paul, yeah. He's talking with his wife. They're having some problems. She's out of town, but I'm assuming that was his father-in-law.
Yes.
He's the captain of the police force.
Yes.
He's like, oh, such and such, his wife will be home this weekend. We can do whatever, the group, whatever. They're planning
Paul
a trip.
Paul was not thrilled with whatever was going to happen, you could tell.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, but we're in. He starts his shift, gets in his car. I really like the way they filmed this, though. Like, it was like super adrenaline. Like, he gets in his car, he's... starting his shift, and he finds this guy like trying to break into this a building.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how the cops have their loudspeaker?
Mm-hmm.
This is the police, don't do that. And the guy literally starts running.
It's James, the homeless guy.
And he lights up his cop car, and the way they shot it,
chase.
You feel like you're right there, like,
yes.
Boom, boom, running yes. through the town. Mm-hmm. And then keep in mind, this he probably was overdramatic doing that.
Mm-hmm. But, oh, Paul, I'm telling you, Paul needs to calm down. Paul has some issues.
So, gets to the town, chases this guy down.
Mm-hmm.
He basically tackles him.
Yeah.
He's like, are you all right? He's like, yeah. The guy's like, who's the guy? Who is he?
James.
James. He's like, that was my work. I forgot my key. I was just trying to get in.
Yeah, right.
And then he's like, he handcuffs him. He's like, I'm going to pat you down. Is there anything sharp in your pockets? I don't mm-hmm. want to get stuck. And he's like, no.
He asked him that like 5 times.
And then he stuck his hand in his pocket and he got instantly. Stuck by a needle.
Instantly, there's a needle in there.
Ian, and he's like, fuck. And he punched him in the face,
clocks
like,
him,
bow.
Clocks him, and he passed, like, basically he
knocks him out.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, shit, I did this in front of my cruiser. And he had the camera on.
And everything. Yeah, so he lets James go, where he's basically, like,
knocked out.
Like, don't do this shit again.
No, he knocks him out. He gets back in his car. He unplugs his camera.
Now he unplugs it, yeah.
Sprays his finger off and everything like that. And then he's like, ugh. Comes to his senses. He's like, you know what? If you did something bad to me, he's talking to the guy now. He gets out of his car. He's like, you know what? You did something bad to me. I did something bad to you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just leave it at that. Yes. You go your way. I'll go my way. But if I see you again, there's going to be some problems.
Right.
He's like basically telling him that there's a problem. If I see you again, you're going to fuck around and find out.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So he lets him go.
Then, you know, he's already upset about whatever's going on with Justine and his father-in-law and now this fucking kid and the needle stick and all that. And then he has to go and tell the captain, his father-in-law, what happened. And they're basically like, well, the video will cycle out within like 30 days or something. So as long as the guy doesn't make a complaint.
Which he won't because he's a drug addict.
Yeah, he's not going to come.
He's a tweaker.
It'll disappear. But he's all worked up and then he gets a call or message, whatever it was, from Justine, who he had seen earlier that day because she was reporting the vandalism to her car. And they meet up at a bar and
they hang out. And then he goes home and smashes her.
Yes. Which, up until that point, Justine... there was no confirmation that that's what they did, but it was heavily implied that that's what they did. So
right.
Then we get confirmation that that's what they did. Which, at this point, did we forget to mention the liquor store? Because I'm assuming that was on Justine's timeline? Because it was following Justine.
Yeah, so that was on Justine's.
Yeah, so the next wife comes home.
So
early,
his wife is out of town.
Mm-hmm.
The cops, the guy he's sleeping. What is his name?
Paul.
Paul's wife is out of town.
Mm-hmm.
He comes home the next day from Justine's house,
mm-hmm.
and he walks in the door. He's thinking he's fine because she's out of town. Mm-hmm. This can go down. It's gonna be fine. He walks in, sees her purse.
Uh oh.
And he's like, oh, you're home early. And she was like, yeah, all excited. And she's like, oh, where have you been? And he was like, oh, I was out.
Mm-hmm.
Long, uncomfortable pause. Like, uh-huh. What's going on?
Yes. And meanwhile, on Justine's timeline, there was a scene.
So and then she's like, you shithead.
Yeah.
And then we go back to Justine's timeline.
I don't think we went back. I think we had already seen this. That's what I'm saying. I'm forgetting because of the way the story is.
Yeah,
because
of the way they shot it.
I think we'd already seen this, but it makes sense to tell it this way because it ties in together. So on Justine's timeline, she had went back to the liquor store. And I think this was after her meeting with the principal where he's like, you need to take a break.
Yes.
And who comes in but Donna, who's Paul's wife, following her, and mind you,
for a while she walks.
Justine doesn't notice.
She's in her own little world. Everybody else is like
moving. Like she is pissed.
Yeah, she is pissed. And yeah. When this scene happens, you're like, bro, where's your situational awareness?
Yes.
This is why people get kidnapped because you guys fuck around and find out, and you don't look behind you.
So Donna confronts her and is just like, basically like, did you sleep with him?
Did you fuck him?
Justine says no, lies.
With that is a lie.
And Donna dumps like a whole bottle of
vodka.
I was gonna say, I thought it was vodka all over
the store owner had to come over and pull her off.
Which, I mean, based on how mad Donna was, that's probably the nicest thing she could have done to her at that point, is douse her in
I thought winter. She was going to kill her. I was like,
I thought she was going to smash the bottle on her head, and she didn't. She just dumped it on her. So, you know, kudos to Donna for at least not going completely off the deep end. But, yeah, so that's how they're kind of tied in together, and then
That happens.
Yeah.
So the next day, the father-in-law is sitting in his office. He's starting his shift. He walks out the building, and he sees the junkie again, the one that he's...
So before that happens, if we're trying to go in order, we go to James's story. So we actually bop over to James, and then this is how it gets tied in, right?
Okay.
Oh, no, maybe that's the last thing Paul does, is he sees James again.
He sees James across the street. We bop over to the drug addict.
So James doesn't have a lot going on other than
he's living
doing
out in
drugs in a tent in
the
woods.
He does meth. So we see him in this tent doing meth in the woods.
And he's out of meth.
And he's out of meth.
This is a problem. So he has no money, and he's trying to get money. So he is now on his way to steal things, which I love. He's like talking on the phone to a family member.
He's like, I got a job. But
and the whole time he's doing this, he's trying to see if any cars are unlocked.
Yeah, like opening car doors.
Just trying to get into the cars. Eventually, he does get a little kid's backpack from someplace.
Yeah.
And tries to pawn the tablet and headphones.
Right.
Which the pawn shop owner was like, no, I don't want this. And, you know, it just doesn't go his way. I don't even remember how he specifically targeted Alex's house.
I think he was, because they were offering the $50,000 for the kids, right? So to find the kids, everybody was like, oh, if you have any information about the...
Oh, so we ended up at the one kid's house.
50,000, or the 17 missing kids, where they're offering a $50,000 reward.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, $50,000 is not very much for 17 kids.
But it's a lot if you're a meth addict.
So he was like, So
he ends up at Alex's
house. He ends up, like, going over to that side of town.
Yeah.
And then he's walking around and just trying to find houses to, like, break into.
And he breaks in there.
And he happens to break into Alex's house.
And
like,
it's like dark.
He tries to, so the way he does it is he tries the front door and he's like, fuck, that doesn't work. Yeah. Tries the back door, doesn't work. Mm-hmm. He ends up climbing up the rain gutter and breaking into the top room.
Yes.
He's not stealth about it at all.
No. It's very loud, everything that he's doing. And he goes downstairs and he's taking a pillowcase off the bed so he can start putting shit in there to steal. And he comes across Alex's parents, who are the zombified version of themselves,
yeah,
on the couch.
So he's walking downstairs.
Very funny.
He's walking in the room and he opens up for the silver and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he notices these people are just sitting on the couch. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry," you know,
trying to
sprue all this bullshit. Like, "Oh, I didn't mean to do this. I was this Oops. That." And then he realized, bro, they're not even moving. They're just sitting there. And he's like, are you okay? Trying to snap his fingers, trying to snap him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know what? Whatever.
And so he just goes back to stealing stuff.
Steal stuff.
Yeah, bunches of silver and, yeah.
And then he hears a noise upstairs. He's like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to investigate it, and then while he's scavenging around the house, he ends up going into the basement.
And sees the kids. And that's the first time we've seen the kids the entire movie.
Right. And you're just like, oh, shit. And then he's like, who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
And then they like all turn around at once.
Look at him.
And look at him. He bolts. And then
he gets
in the living room. He trips. And then the parents that have been zombified get up and move. Right, and so he bolts to the front door,
mm-hmm.
but it's locked. It's locked. He's like, "Oh fuck!" And then he has to try to shut it to unlock it. But
because they have like the chain, yeah.
So he does that. He gets out. He gets out of the house, and then it clicks in his head. He's like, "I know where the kids are." So he calls the hotline number, and keep in mind, he's
But this is what, I think he saw the poster when he was hawking the silver. I don't think he saw it the first time. I think he just happened stance.
Yeah, you're right. Because
because when he was waiting on the dude to count the money out and pay him for the stuff he stole, he looked up and then he saw the poster and he was like, oh shit, I know where they are. And it's $50,000. So, yeah, then we cut to him trying to call the police station to report it, but is like,
I don't want to come in.
I don't do well. I have a, what did he say? It was like a phobia.
I have a phobia of the police.
Stupid of the police.
Can you just bring the money to me?
Can you meet me? Yeah, it's so funny. But I'm assuming what ultimately happened was they were like, you have to come in and tell us. So he'd already been warned by Paul to stay away.
I think he was on his way to the police station.
That's what I'm saying. He was coming to the police station. I believe he was probably told on the phone, you need to come in person. So he was like, oh, fuck, I'll go. And on his way there, Paul spots him.
Right.
And Paul yells at him.
Yeah, he's pissed.
And he's gone. James is like, uh-uh, no. And he takes off again. But of course, Paul is going to follow him.
Right.
Because he's pissed off. And because now he's had this whole thing with Donna, because Donna knows what he did now with Justine. It's a whole thing. So Paul just has a lot of anger.
Right.
And he follows
Paul.
James gets back to the woods and thinks he's safe. And he sees a fucking clown looking lady in the woods.
And he's like, oh, I'm tweaking out.
Yeah, so he go, and it's so fucking funny, though, because he gets in the tent and zips it closed. And we're like, what is that going to do for you?
Exactly. He's like, it's not real.
Yeah.
And then you see somebody unzip it.
Slowly.
But Paul, not Paul, but the drug addict, right?
James,
he gets his needles. He has
three. It was
like,
three needles.
Heroin needles. I think they're heroin, meth, whatever. And he's like, I'm going to fuck this person up. Yeah. So the person unzips the tent and he just lunges it and stabs him in his face.
And it's Paul.
And he is like, he handcuffs him.
Oh, my God. It was so funny, though, because you're like, of course it's Paul who gets stabbed again with this guy's needles. And he's already pissed at him. So, yeah, he handcuffs him.
Puts him back in his cruiser.
But I just love how Paul's turned around. He's just like, do you have AIDS?
Yeah, he was like, do you have AIDS?
And James is like, what? And he's like, do you have AIDS? And he's just like, I don't think so.
Not that I know of. He's like, AIDS, syphilis, anything like that, or hurt or not. What do you get from that? Like, can you get herpes?
Hepatitis. But James is like, I don't think so. Like, he has no fucking clue.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously doesn't go to the doctor regularly. But then he says,
I know where the
kids are.
So we were watching this at the theater, and the girl next to us, like, with her kids, were like, oh, that isn't even his needles. He's probably shared them with somebody.
Yes, right?
I was like, that's pretty accurate.
Sharing is caring when you're a drug addict.
So he's like, I know where the kids are. And she's like, yeah, right. So he brings them back to Alex's house.
Yeah, he's like, go to the house and you can go inside and check.
Pulls up.
Yeah.
Leaves him in the car.
But it's also funny, too, because James is like, you're not going to just keep the money for yourself, are you?
Right. He pulls up, and he was like, how do I know you're not going to just take this $50,000 for yourself? And he's like, officer. And he kind of looks at him like,
he doesn't even reply.
What the fuck? And then he just looks at him, and he gets out, and he's like, officer?
Nothing. Paul leaves.
Knocks on the door.
Goes inside because
he's talking to somebody. We don't see who he's talking to.
Who lets him in.
But somebody lets him in, and he's like, the drug addict's like, what the fuck? And
he's gone for hours.
So
it goes from daylight to night.
Tonight, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the door opens up. He's like, oh, come on. And then he sees Paul come back.
It's not Paul, though.
Yeah, but he's been turned into a zombie.
You can tell. Like, everybody in the audience knew because of the way he was moving. They were like, James is now fucked. And sure enough, he comes barreling down there, opens the door, and, you know, that's it for James.
Like, yeah.
We don't get to see everything that happens, but
he gets pulled out of the cop car. He's still handcuffs. He's yelling. Yelling at the top of the lungs, somebody help me.
Nope.
And nobody comes.
No one's coming.
Actually, he gets turned into a zombie, too, because...
Yeah, we see him later.
Yeah, we see him later, because when Josh Brolin's character and...
Yeah, wait, that's a little ahead of where we are. So then I think we end up at... Then I think this must be when we go to Marcus, potentially. Yeah,
the parents.
No. The parents?
Yeah, because...
I don't think we go to Alex next, because we do Marcus, the principal, before we do...
Okay, so we're back to the principal?
I think. The principal's somewhere in
So,
here.
The principal, we see him...
Basically, we see him on the phone with Justine at a grocery store with his husband.
Yes. You know,
picking out cereal and doing mundane things. And
oh, yeah, you're right.
He's kind of blowing her off, and he's like, yeah, I'll set a meeting with the parents. It's fine. We'll investigate.
It's a healthcare request or a...
She wants a CPS.
CPS check, yeah. A wellness check, yes.
So, he... meets the aunt who comes in, and she looks like fucking Bozo the Clown.
When I first saw her, I was
weird. Her makeup.
I immediately thought of Bozo, and I'm sorry about that David Arquette because he owns Bozo now. But he—that's exactly what I thought.
It's the hair color and the way it's poofy, and it has like the weirdest
haircut and everything like that,
if you can call them that. It's so she looks bizarre, and she comes in with some bullshit story about how Alex's parents are, like, sick, and they can't come. And then he's like, well, I really need to speak with the parents. And
this is a wellness or welfare check.
Yeah, and she's just like, well, maybe I can get him to meet you later, whatever. I mean, it basically ends with not a true resolution because he's like, I do have to talk to the parents. But she's trying to assure him, like, everything is fine, you know.
And then
don't worry about it.
Then they set up a date for them to all meet at his house.
Well, they're going to set a meeting because she's saying that they were going to set a meeting, but she just shows up at his house.
So they were eating all those hot dogs for themselves?
Yes. I don't think because remember, she comes and is knocking on the door and he's just like, where the fuck did you come from? And she's just like, oh, I thought of something I needed to talk to you about. And then I missed the bus and I had to run or walk here or whatever her story was.
And then, can I have some water?
I need some water and... And no, those two fat bucks were just going to eat all those hot dogs they had made.
Wong was like, nah, you can't. But his husband was like, oh, yeah, come on
He's
in.
He's like, oh, no, of course.
Come on in.
Of course, yeah, the principal was right to be like, I don't want you in my house. So she comes in, and then she's like, I want a bowl of water. And they're like...
A bowl? Yeah, when she said that, I was like, what?
Yeah, she wants a bowl. So then she's standing there talking to them, and then she starts getting shit out of her bag. And of course, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
This can't be good. And she brings out like a twig looking, like a stick. And then she... She has those ribbons that she stole from his office.
The stick had like thorns in it.
It always has thorns on it, yeah. So it's got these little thorns on it.
She was playing with it in her hand and
then she slices
her hand.
And she's like, oops, can you get me a rag? It's so fucking psychotic.
And then she starts playing with it.
Yeah.
And she wraps some of their hair, or Wong's hair, in it.
Well, she had the ribbons on there already. And I think the ribbons belonged to his husband.
Yes. So because she got them from the office.
Yeah. So when she broke it, that instigates the zombie possession cordyceps concept thing. And
Wong
the principal beats the shit.
Fuck out of his husband.
He takes his own head and bends into his husband so bad. It's so gross.
And then, like...
And funny. It is funny, though, but it's really,
and then
really gross.
Brutally murders this guy.
Yes.
There's no coming back from this.
And then she pulls out another magic bag. The blonde hair that we now are like, that's definitely Justine's hair.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
Wraps it on there.
Breaks it.
Boop, and he's gone.
He literally is running through town like a missile.
And finds
with
her.
Blood on his face.
So crazy, and no one says anything.
And it's not like he was just running a couple blocks. He was running full force
and he's doing
through
the
town.
Same arm out thing.
Exactly.
He looks bizarre.
So at this time, Justine and Josh Brolin's character are at the gas station.
Yes, Josh Archer.
Archer, yeah.
Right. He wants to.
Talk
basically,
to her.
He wants to talk to her and be like,
what's
you know,
going on?
We should figure this out, you know, together. And then out of nowhere comes the principal.
So she's pumping gas, and out of the corner of her eye, she sees the principal running at him.
Deadpan headed for her.
And he knocks her over, tackles her, and starts strangling her.
She ends up under the car, trying to get away.
And then I'm glad Josh Brolin was there, Archer, because he ends up punching him. And he's like, get off of that. And then she runs under the car to go in the gas station. And I'm just like, come on, Josh Brolin, beat the fuck out of this guy. Yeah. And like, he hits him, and then he just bounces right off, and he just keeps coming and coming and coming.
He gets into the gas station and is following her around in there, and she manages to get back in her car.
No, you're skipping him. So she runs in the gas station. Mm-hmm. He's following her. And she is literally running through this gas station trying to get out the back mm-hmm. way. And you see him coming. The store owner's like behind the counter and everything. He's like, what the fuck is going on? She runs in, turns right, tries to go out the back door, but it's locked. And she gets jammed up at the door. And you're like, oh, here it comes. She's going to do it. And then Josh Archer, out of nowhere, slams him in the cooler and breaks the glass and finally subdues him.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of knocked down for a second. Then mm-hmm. she runs out, mm-hmm. gets in her car, tries to start it up. And he's like beating out the window, like trying to punch mm-hmm. it open. And then she finally zooms. And then he's running through town, right? So Josh
on the road.
On the road. Yes. Josh Brolin's character Archer gets in his car. He's like, I'm gonna follow this.
Yeah.
And while he's following him, he gets hit by a fucking car, like head on. Yeah. Boom.
Benedict's character Marcus, he just gets slammed into by some lady, and that finally kills him because his brains are everywhere.
Yeah. He is done. Yes. Done for. Mm-hmm. Done for.
Yes.
And you're just like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah. And then I think because again, it's a little fuzzy. We've only seen this once. As far as when everything transitions, but I think this is when we go to see finally what happened to Alex.
So they get in the car, and he is trying to figure out where are these lines. And so Archer's doing his own investigation,
right?
Mm-hmm. Because he keeps rewatching the night his son ran away in this particular pattern. So he goes over to a friend of his house. This is where we see
they weren't friends; it was just another parent.
Yeah, Justin Long's house.
Yeah.
And he was like,
he asked the wife, and the wife was like, no, I don't want to show you the footage of what happened to my kid.
So he waits
for the dad, and then he's just like, can I
see the footage?
And she is pissed the whole time.
So he has a map mm-hmm. of where they're thinking about running. So after this event at the store with him getting hit and killed, she's at the police station, I want to say. Or no, it was at the hospital. And then Josh Brolin's character.
Yeah, when he gets stitched up, then she waited for him.
Exactly. They're at the hospital.
Because of the cuts he had,
And then Justine shows up and is like, are you okay? And then they start being friends.
Yeah,
and then
when he shows her the map.
Then when they get in the car, he's like, this is the map. Mm-hmm. This is where I think they're intersecting. And she was like, well, this is Alex's house.
Yeah, he lives right here.
So they're doing their own, like, investigation on Alex's house. Yeah. But when they pull up, Paul's cruiser...
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. Before that, we have to find out what actually is happening.
Okay.
By the time they pull up and see Paul's cruiser outside, we now know what happened. Like, we have the pieces. So we went to Alex's story. That's what I'm saying.
So
it went over to Alex, and we see Alex and his dad, and mm-hmm. everything's good, and he gets told about the aunt is coming, and they're kind of both like, we don't know this lady. It comes in the middle of the night and looks very creepy because Alex goes to see her. She has, like, no hair. She looks very sickly and weird. Alex goes to school, comes home, well, gets ready to leave, and his dad never picks him up. No one picks him up from school, and he has to walk home, which is unusual.
Right.
Gets home, and his parents are just sitting at the dining room table.
And he gets in. They'll say, hey, what's up? And that's about it. And then the aunt is sitting at the head of the table. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we're going to cook dinner. And she's like,
she's going to cook dinner. And she's like, your parents are just resting. All sorts of bullshit. And he like throws water in his dad's face because he knows something's wrong.
And he doesn't do anything. Doesn't move, nothing.
No, because he's like a zombie at this point.
And then she's like, you can't tell anybody that your parents are resting like this.
Yeah, she makes them, like, stab themselves in the face. No,
that's the next morning. So the next morning he gets up and he's like, I want you to sit down. He's like, before you go to school, I want you to promise me that you're not going to tell anybody. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't say anything. And then she breaks the stick again. And they take the mom and the dad take their fork and they're just like, stabbing themselves repeatedly mm-hmm. in the face. Yeah. And he's like, okay, I get it now. So mm-hmm. he says, nope, I won't say anything.
And she, he feeds them soup.
Yeah.
So she has to go buy the soup, mind you. This stupid fucking aunt doesn't go buy anything.
She tells him, look, you're going to have to feed your parents soup.
So he has to go buy it.
And then he got, the first time he got whatever's left over. And then when he was smart, he got tomato soup. Because at first he's just trying to feed him chicken noodle soup. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, oh, bro, so you're going to have some hard time.
And, yeah.
So the next day he had to go to the store and he got all tomato.
But and the pull caps.
Yeah, and the pull caps. So you saw him struggling to open it. I mean, the way they shot it, it put you right there in the driver's seat. Like, right. you felt what he was going through emotionally.
And he never talks to anybody at school. He doesn't mention what's going on.
So.
Never brings it up. And now he rides the bus.
Right.
She told him to.
And so his aunt says, I'm sick. I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to get better. And he's like, do you want to go to the hospital? And she's like, no, the hospital won't be able to fix me. Mm-hmm. Then he was like, you know, maybe your kids from your class, they can help me. And he's like, how is that going to help you? So she was like, bring me something from everybody in your class. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay. He was like, if I do this, will you leave? And she was like, yeah, I'll leave.
Yeah.
So the next day he's going to school and you see him trying to figure out, like,
what he can take.
What am I going to take from all these people? Mm-hmm. So they're at gym class. So they're breaking up their day. So the teacher brings them to gym. She sneaks out. He sneaks out back mm-hmm. to the classroom to steal mm-hmm. everything. And then I'm glad he took the name cards.
Yeah, so every kid had decorated their own little name sticker thing.
They had their own cubby holes. Yeah.
That's what he took. He just went right down the line and snatched all of those and put them in his bag.
So, because they had to physically do them, right?
Yes, each kid decorated their own.
Okay, name. So that's why it worked. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand, like, when he's gets all the nameplates into his bag. Mm-hmm. The teacher pops up and she's like, what are you doing in here?
She didn't even notice. I guess he did that.
I don't understand that. Like, yeah. How she didn't notice, like, what was going on.
At some point, I'm assuming they noticed they were missing, but didn't
tell anybody.
Think it was significant, or I don't know what happened.
Or maybe they never explained that part of the movie.
No.
But I was like, well, somebody surely would have caught this.
Yeah, but I don't know. They don't mention if that was any concern. But he brings all those home to the aunt, gives it to him under the door, and then she makes her little weird soup with it. Bright tears all of them up, and then
that's the night they all disappeared.
They all come at 2:17.
He's asleep. Mm-hmm. He gets this, like, somebody's calling him, like his parents or something. He gets up, walks into his aunt's room. And he's like, it's like 2:15 at the time, because they glance at the clock. Mm-hmm. And she's does the spell, breaks everything, and all these kids run to her house. And they're literally standing on the porch waiting for them to get there.
Yeah,
because,
one by one coming in.
Because she's using their life force. She's a witch.
Yeah.
So she's using all their life force to get better.
Yep.
Or to be younger.
Yep.
So that's why she was doing this.
And now he feeds them soup.
So he has to feed everybody soup.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, bro. So Archer's kid is missing, but Archer's kid's a bully to
Alex.
Yeah. And I leaned over to Sammy. I was like, I probably would let him go because he was mean to me. Mm-hmm. But that's Alex's maturity level.
Alex fed him.
He fed him soup. He fed everybody soup. Mm-hmm. And so, we're lead backs to the investigation. So they pull up.
Yeah, Justine and Archer.
They pull up. Mm-hmm. They see Paul's Rover there, or car there, and they're like, what's that mean?
Yeah, they're like, oh, the police are here.
And then the door opens.
Very creepy.
And Paul comes out and sees them, and he waves them in.
But he does, like a very weird, like, nobody would actually do that kind of wave, like, gesture.
And then, like idiots, both of them get out of the car
and
go into the house.
And guess what? Paul's not saying anything. Paul's just looking all creepy.
And so once they get in, Paul does his zombie stuff and he tries to kill her.
Well, before they made it in, we do see a bit where the aunt has put salt on the floor.
Yes.
Upstairs.
And they cross the salt.
And she tells Alex, don't cross the salt, because she has it like right in front of her room and his parents are there behind the salt, but they're not moving. They're just standing there. And she says, don't cross the salt line.
Right.
And so she has also done it downstairs, we learn. And of course, yeah, Justine and them, they cross the salt line and then they end up triggering an attack on them.
Right.
With whatever spell the aunt has set. And so, yeah, there's, you know, fight ensues. It's very gross. Justine uses like a grater on Paul's face.
Yes. That was actually pretty cool, though.
Yeah. And she's smart, though. She ends up shooting him.
Yes.
And kills him. I mean, yeah, ultimately. But
she gets his gun, shoots him.
Yeah.
And then,
Archer is attacked by the drug addict James.
Yeah, he's hitting him.
Remember, he keeps like basically throwing him across the room, and then James pops right back up, and he comes, and they end up heading to the basement, and Archer sees the kids. So
he's looking around for his son.
Justine shoots James as well, and then Archer goes down and sees all the kids to find them, and
He gets, the aunt is sitting there in the dark.
Yeah, the aunt was downstairs. That's right.
Jumps up, and you're just like, what the fuck?
So she gets him. And he goes back up, and now he's going to attack Justine because he is now a zombie.
So upstairs, Alex crosses the salt.
And the parents,
zombies, they try to attack him. He is running in every rich room. Mm-hmm. He finally gets into the aunt's room.
Yes. I think he ended up in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And took some of her hair. And he knows how to do the ritual because he's seen her do it.
Exactly.
So he wraps her hair around the thing. He does the blood. He, you know, pokes himself with the bowl. And then he snaps the twig. And guess what? All those fucking kids, boom, coming after her.
Yeah, and she was downstairs with Archer and Justine, and they were like, and then she felt it. Like, she knew.
Yeah, you see her turn, and she's just like,
oh, shit, this is happening. And so she runs out the door, right? And I think this is so funny. Like, these people, she runs into people's houses. She runs into yards.
So funny.
And the way they shoot it, you just have these random people being like, what the fuck is going on?
Like, the guy stops mowing his lawn, and he watches her, and then just, like, a gaggle of children running after her, and he's just kind of like, okay. But, yeah, they literally, like, when they run through the home, like, she opens doors and runs through people's kitchens, whatever it is, not the kids.
They break windows, jump through
everything. They just slam through everything. Stuff. Yes, there is no doors for them. They just barge in. No stopping them at all, running through. And I don't know how many yards and backyards and everything they went through, but finally one of the kids grabs her.
Yeah. Yes. It was so satisfying when that happened.
And then all the other kids join in and they literally rip her to pieces. Like, you see her arms and her legs thrown across the yard. They pull like her head apart.
And then
so gross.
After she's dead, everybody goes
that
back
ends
to
the spell.
Yeah, it ends the spell.
Yeah.
Everybody goes back to being normal.
Yeah.
But the kids.
Well, I mean, Archer is like, where the fuck did they go? So he's like, I gotta go find him. So he just follows the destruction path.
Right.
And that's very funny, too, because he ends up in someone's kitchen. And so, they're talking about the fact that this just happened. And she's like, there's a man in here now. It's so funny. But he finds the destruction.
And then eventually finds his son.
And when he locates his kid, he just picks him up and leaves. Doesn't do anything else with the other kids or the lady that's been torn apart.
At this time, he was strangling Justine.
Mm-hmm.
And then
he was almost going to kill her, too.
She was almost going to die, and then the spell was broken. Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't even, like, apologize. He just leaves.
To go find his kid.
And then Justine, instead of leaves... She goes up the house or up the stairs to find Alex
and his parents. Yeah,
and his parents.
Yeah,
and when she finds them, they're in the bathroom. They're still zombified.
They're all still zombified. So the little girl narrator tells us.
She comes back on the screen and says, "You know, some of the kids are starting to talk now." Alex
had to go live with a different family. I think it was a different aunt. They said,
but he's nicer. She's nicer.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk.
Yeah.
They still don't talk.
No. So they're still messed up, even though the spell is over.
And in the beginning, they were like, you're never going to hear about this because the police covered it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this, there's parts of this movie where there's no sound. And it's so creepy.
Yes.
It makes your hair and the back of your neck tingle.
Mm-hmm.
This is a phenomenal movie. I'm glad we saw it in theaters because I think if you saw it at home, you would miss a bunch.
For one, it was fun in the crowd. Everybody laughing, reacting to it. And I mean, this is billed as a horror mystery, which we agreed it. We felt like it was more like a thriller mystery with some horror elements to it than anything. But also, it's a comedy. Like, it is funny.
There's some funny parts into this.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, what would you rate this movie?
Oh, easily a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
I would watch this again just to see
what I missed. Like,
little things to pick up on. Yeah, easily would watch it again.
One thing I really liked about this movie is, you know, you go into movies and everybody's kind of like, on their phone, talking. Mm-hmm. Nobody did that.
Yeah,
everybody was so enthralled in the movie to see what was going on.
Yeah, everyone was highly engaged.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job.
Yeah, it was so good.
Kill count of this movie?
It was like really only like five people died, I think. The aunt died.
Paul died.
James died.
The drug addict died.
The principal died.
The principal died, okay.
Maybe it was
four people. So.
No, and the husband died. That's five.
Oh, the husband. Yeah, yes, so it is five.
So.
Yeah, so.
Not a lot of true kills, but it is very creepy mixed with the funny. And
right.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I liked the way they broke it up where we got to see different people.
Yeah,
and their story. And then you kind of have to piece it all together to see, like, why are they all intertwined all of a sudden?
Right.
What actually happened?
You know?
Because you're left with, like, half the movie still, like, what is going on here?
Yeah. It was kind of like a whodunit kind of thing, that feel. I think they hit that spot on.
But, I mean, realistically, the second the fucking aunt walked into the principal's office, you're like, yeah, there's something wrong with her. Like, you just knew. The entire vibe of the character.
Even the principal was like, we've never met before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no, I would have known that. And he was like, even the secretary, when they were like, your 2 o'clock is here. Mm-hmm. And she's leading her into the room. She's like, what the fuck am I looking at?
Yes.
You can tell in her face, like,
yeah,
what am I doing?
And he's just like, yeah, send her in. But you can tell she's like, I don't think so. You probably want to meet her. But, I mean, it's like a hocus-pocus type thing because the witch is using their essence to stay youthful, which is exactly what she's doing. Hocus-pocus. But, yeah, there's a lot more to this.
The brutality of it.
Yeah, it's not...
Disney can't show that.
It's not a hocus-pocus, no. But it's kind of in that vein if you think about what she's doing to these people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Did you rate it?
I would give this a 9 out of 10. Okay. I would probably give this a 9.5 because I enjoyed it so much.
It was really
I thought
good.
The way they shot it, the suspense, the sound elements all just came together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would give this a 9.5.
Yeah, it did not drag at all. You were definitely engaged the whole movie.
Yeah, this is definitely one to see in the theaters.
Yes, this is a great theater movie, really and truly it is.
Because I think if you were to try to see this at home, you would just miss everything.
You would miss some of the elements of it. The theater enjoyment of sitting there
and
seeing it. Yeah, I agree.
So,
mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else?
No, I think we covered it. Yeah.
Definitely go see this. Let us know what your favorite part is.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we will see you in the next show.
Yeah.
You guys stay spooky out there.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, everybody's entitled to one good scare.
Yep. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast is produced and hosted by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Podcast Network. Post-production and intro by Sammy Brooksby. Follow the show on Instagram @BoogeymanPod. You can also follow the Limitless Broadcasting Company at Limitless Broadcasting, and your horror hosts at Robert1950 Studios and at The Salmon Lamb. We also have a TikTok at 1950 Studios. Email your creepy comments and spooky suggestions to us at boogeymanpod@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Have a horrific week!